You're listening to Radio Hangar, aviation talk powered by AI, fueled by passion. Welcome to the hangar. I'm Taildragger, and friends, today we're going to talk about something that sits right at the heart of what aviation is supposed to be about: freedom, courage, and proving every last doubter wrong from the cockpit of a fighter plane. We're talking about the Tuskegee Airmen, the Red Tails. The men who changed aviation, changed a war, and changed a nation. And I'll tell you right now, if this story doesn't move you, you might want to check your pulse. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let me set the scene for you. It's 1940. Europe is on fire. The United States military is building up for a war everybody knows is coming, and the Army Air Corps, which is what we had before the Air Force existed as its own branch. The Army Air Corps has a problem. Well, they had a lot of problems, but one of them was this. They had thousands of young black men who wanted to fly, who wanted to serve their country, and the official position of the United States military was that they couldn't do it. Not that they shouldn't, that they couldn't. The brass actually believed, and I mean, they put this in writing, that black men lacked the intelligence, the coordination, and the courage to operate military aircraft in combat. Now here's where it gets interesting, because there were already black pilots in America. Bessie Coleman had earned her pilot's license back in 1921. She had to go all the way to France to do it, because no flight school in the United States would take her, but she did it. And after her, pilots like C. Alfred Anderson and Charles Alfred Anderson, known as Chief Anderson, were already flying, already teaching, already proving that the premise was garbage. In 1941, under pressure from civil rights leaders and the black press, the Army Air Corps reluctantly established what they called a military pilot training program at Tuskegee Army Airfield in Alabama. Tuskegee Institute, now Tuskegee University, was already a historically black college with a civilian pilot training program. Chief Anderson had been running it. The man had flown Eleanor Roosevelt in a Piper J-3 Cub in 1941. She climbed in the back seat. He took her up, and when they landed, she reportedly turned to the skeptics and said, "Well, he can fly all right." That flight mattered. That one little hop in a Cub mattered. Sometimes the biggest moments in aviation history happen at pattern altitude. So the program begins. And right from the start, these men faced something no other cadets in the Army Air Corps faced. They had to fight two wars, one overseas and one at home. The training was segregated, the base was segregated, the town of Tuskegee was segregated. These men would go through the exact same grueling flight training as their white counterparts, washing out at the same rates, meeting the same standards, and then walk into a restaurant off base and be told they couldn't sit down. Think about that. The next time you complain about a check ride, the first class, class 42C, started with 13 cadets, 5 made it through, 5. And the leader of that first class was a man named Benjamin O. Davis Jr. Now that name should ring a bell. His father, Benjamin O. Davis Sr., was the first black general in the United States Army. Jr. would eventually become the first black general in the United States Air Force. But in 1942, he was a young lieutenant who had endured 4 years of silence at West Point. 4 years where his fellow cadets refused to speak to him, eat with him, or room with him. 4 years, and he graduated 35th in a class of 276. That is steel, friends. That is the kind of steel you cannot bend. Davis took command of the 99th Fighter Squadron, the first black flying unit in the United States military. They shipped out to North Africa in April of 1943, flying Curtiss P-40 Warhawks, the P-40. Not the most glamorous airplane in the war. It was heavy, it wasn't the fastest thing in the sky, but it was tough, and it could take a punch, kind of like the men flying it. Their first combat mission was a strafing run against the island of Pantelleria in the Mediterranean, June of 1943, and they performed well. But here's the thing. Even after they started flying combat, the doubters didn't stop. There was an internal army report, the so-called McCloy Committee findings, that questioned the combat effectiveness of black pilots. Some commanders tried to have them pulled from combat duty. Davis himself had to go back to the Pentagon and testify before the War Department, defending his men's record with actual data, actual mission reports, against institutional prejudice wrapped up in official language. He won that fight too. In 1944, the 332nd Fighter Group was formed, bringing together the 99th, the 100th, the 301st, and the 302nd Fighter Squadrons, all under Davis's command, and they transitioned to the airplane that would make them legends. The North American P-51 Mustang, pull up a chair for this part, the P-51D Mustang, 1200 horsepower Merlin engine, a maximum speed around 437 miles per hour, 650 caliber machine guns, and the 332nd Fighter Group painted the tails of their Mustangs red, bright, unmistakable red. That's where the name came from, the Red Tails. Now the primary mission of the 332nd in Italy was bomber escort. They flew with the 15th Air Force, escorting B-17 Flying Fortresses and B-24 Liberators on long-range strategic bombing missions deep into Germany, Austria, and the Balkans, and they were good at it. There's a legend you've probably heard that the Red Tails never lost a bomber to enemy fighters. For decades, that was repeated as gospel. The actual historical record and the Air Force's own research shows that the number wasn't quite zero. There were a small number of bombers lost to enemy fighters on missions escorted by the 332nd, but here's what the record absolutely does show. Their loss rate was among the lowest of any escort group in the 15th Air Force. Bomber crews requested them by name. When you saw those Red Tails pulling up alongside your B-17, you felt safer, and in a war where bomber crews were being shot to pieces over Germany, that reputation was earned in blood. Let me tell you about one mission that shows you what these men were made of. March 24, 1945, the 15th Air Force launches a massive raid against a tank factory in Berlin. This is a 1,600-mile round trip from their base in Ramatelli, Italy, 1,600 miles over the Alps, across enemy territory, into the most heavily defended airspace in the world. The Luftwaffe had jet fighters by this point, Messerschmitt 262s, the first operational jet fighter in history, faster than anything the Allies had. The 332nd flew escort that day, and they encountered those jets, and they shot down three of them. Three jet fighters brought down by propeller-driven Mustangs, Roscoe Brown, Charles Brantley, and Earl Lane, each downed a 262 that day. Roscoe Brown described closing on the jet from above, diving to match its speed, and putting a burst into it. In a propeller airplane attacking a jet, think about the nerve that takes, think about the flying skill. For that mission, the 332nd Fighter Group received a Distinguished Unit Citation. They earned a total of two of those during the war, along with nearly 1,000 individual awards and decorations, 150 Distinguished Flying Crosses, 14 Bronze Stars, 8 Purple Hearts for those wounded in combat, and 66 of them were killed in action. 32 became prisoners of war, 66 men who gave everything. Remember that number? And what happened when they came home? The men who had fought fascism in Europe came home to Jim Crow in America. Some of them were still in uniform when they were denied service at restaurants, told to move to the back of the bus, barred from veterans organizations. They had shot down 112 enemy aircraft in aerial combat. They had destroyed or damaged over 400 enemy aircraft on the ground. They had sunk a destroyer with machine gun fire from their P-47 Thunderbolts, which is a sentence I never get tired of saying. And they came home to a country that still questioned whether they were equal. But here's the thing about the Tuskegee Airmen, and this is why this story matters beyond aviation. They didn't stop fighting. They took the discipline, the precision, the refusal to quit that they had learned in those cockpits, and they carried it into the civil rights movement. Benjamin O. Davis Jr. helped implement the desegregation of the Air Force under President Truman's Executive Order 9981 in 1948. Many Tuskegee Airmen became leaders in their communities, in education, in business, in government. They had proven what they set out to prove, not just that black men could fly, but that the entire rotten framework of segregation was built on a lie. There's a museum at Moton Field in Tuskegee, Alabama, now a National Historic Site run by the National Park Service. If you ever get the chance to visit, go stand on that ramp. Look at the runway where those men learned to fly. There's also the commemorative Air Force Red Tail Squadron, which flies a restored P-51C Mustang painted in the Red Tail colors, named Tuskegee Airmen. They take that airplane to air shows all over the country, and when you see it fly, when you hear that Merlin engine winding up and that Red Tail catches the sunlight, it'll put a lump in your throat. I don't care how many air shows you've been to. In 2007, the surviving Tuskegee Airmen were collectively awarded the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest civilian honor Congress can bestow. About 300 of them were still alive to receive it. President George W. Bush presented it, and he said something that stuck with me. He said, "You helped change America." They did more than that. They helped change aviation. They proved that the sky doesn't care about the color of your skin. The sky only cares whether you can fly. And every time I see a young person of any background climbing into a cockpit for the first time, I think about those 13 cadets in Class 42C. Five of them made it through, five men who opened a door that will never close again. This segment drew on research from the National Museum of the United States Air Force, the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, the National Park Service's records on the Tuskegee Airmen National Historic Site, Daniel Hallman's detailed combat research from the Air Force Historical Research Agency, and the Tuskegee Airmen Incorporated archives. As always, this is Radio Hangar, an AI-generated broadcast built by pilots who believe these stories deserve to be told and retold. You can find us at radiohangar.com. This is Taildragger. 66 of them didn't come home. Say their names when you can. Fly their memory when you fly. Radio Hangar. Keep the blue side up.